This is a Pinball News production.
Well, first I want to welcome everybody. My name is Jack Guarnieri. That's how you say that. Jersey Jack, Pinball Jack, Jack of all trades in Australia. I'm Jackaroo. Jersey Jack is a pen name that I have because I write in Replay magazine. Eddie Adlam, a friend of mine that is the publisher of Replay, he was thinking of a name for me and he couldn't come up with anything that he could print. So he came up with Jersey Jack. Is Blake here? Blake, cool, you made it. How the heck are we doing over at the park? Are we making money today?
Yeah, doing good.
Okay, good. You know, I barely made my connecting flight today. I came from Newark to Memphis. I flew Delta. I never fly Delta. I fly Continental because I'm lead access. We do charity work with Continental, so they bumped me up. And as I was coming into Memphis, there was a microburst, and I don't know what that is, but the plane felt like it was Dorothy's house. And I said a couple of prayers, and they opened the airport again, and I landed. And when I landed, I barely made it to my connecting flight. I was checking my Google Maps to see it was going to be 7 hours and 30 minutes to drive here. So I probably would have just been getting here now if the plane didn't make it. So that was good. I want to thank, famous Ed Vanderveen. Where is he? Is he still here? He took pictures and ran away and ate pizza, and he went back downstairs. And Craig Hassel, who is a customer, and I never met him until today. I want to thank them for inviting me to listen to the ravings of my lunatic mind. And it seems they really have done an amazing job. This is my first trip to the TPF, the Texas Pinball Festival. And I guess what they say is true. Everything is bigger in Texas. So you guys did a marvelous job. I love Texas. Just I want to get that out there. I am a Yankee fan. I was smart enough not to bring my Yankee crap today. I'm trying to sell some things here and not create more problems. I know we got our behind kicked, but, maybe you guys will get a ring 1 year. We have 27 of them in New York. Nothing wrong. I'm an owner in a company, and I'm the president and CEO of a company called Elot USA, and that company is a company that is a major operator in the United States, and we operate several thousand amusement games in amusement parks and theme parks, including here in Texas, Six Flags Over Texas, where Blake Ash is my manager. Thank you for leaving the park unattended right now, Blake. I appreciate that very much. But I know we have other people there. About 280 people work for the company all over the country. And it's a lot of fun. My trademark saying for that company that I had trademarked is, our business is fun, because it is. And I trademarked the saying, our games are fun, for Jersey Jack Pinball, which is a completely separate company from Elot USA. It has nothing to do with it, ownership-wise, operation-wise, nothing. I'm a majority owner of that corporation. I gave away a certain amount of stock to people that work for the company. So they have the opportunity to create something great for all of you and for themselves. I believe in sweat equity. I believe in shared responsibility. I like my employees, like Blake, to take ownership of the company because he's running a location that does more than $1 million a year. He's running a small business. He's in charge of payroll and dealing with the parks, the politics, the customers, all the things that go on. So, I believe in sharing. And I want to really get to the whole pinball thing, which is the... This is just like when I read in church. I'm like, Pete, Gary, you didn't have that problem. In Texas, I get to go. We have stuff at Galveston at the beach and Kima, and I get to go to San Antonio, and I get to eat Rudy's barbecue. I was saying that before, and so I get out here a bunch of times, but I'm really happy to be here now. Pizza was okay, everybody, speaking of food? Okay. Well, Handsome, I want to give props out to Handsome Tom at GameHeroes.com, and at least he calls them heroes. He doesn't call them grinders or subs or whatever, so it's kind of like a Brooklyn thing. I figure it was close to dinner, so you might as well manja, and that was good. Also, you may notice I have a little bit of an accent, or maybe you guys have accents. It's half Brooklyn and half New Jersey, so it's like part Tony Soprano and part like whatever else it is. So bear with it if I drop certain letters or whatever. If you need me to say something over again, I certainly will. I see a lot of you got Jersey Jack pinball shirts, so wear them well in the best of health and go out and evangelize and promote the company and all the things that we're going to be doing. And I'm just going to take a couple of minutes. I'll just explain to you what I'm going to do. So I'm kind of thinking that I'll talk a little bit, and then I'll take some questions, and then I have an announcement to make today. And then we'll take some more questions because there's going to be more questions come out of the announcement. And then I know there's a movie here, so I was remiss in not supplying popcorn that was buttered and some other things too, so I'm sorry about that. This morning I kind of knew it was going to be a good day because at 3:29 this morning when I drove from home to Newark Airport, the third song on the radio was Pinball Wizard. So I said, that was really cool. That was like an omen. I said, that was something really good. I just want to tell you also my thoughts about a business, and I just touched on it a little bit before. And, you know, I kind of wrote them down because I don't want to be completely rambling. What I believe a business should serve you, the customers of the business. A lot of people think that, you know, they have jobs and they want to go open a business because they want to work for themselves. I don't work for myself. Every one of my customers is my boss, okay? I'm only here, and I can only be in business because of you. I'm not going to tell you that I'm better than you are. I'm not better than you are. I'm the same as you are, okay? The first part of what I do is I'm a customer of my own company. And in the case of Jersey Jack Pinball, I'm a player. So I want to make money. We all want to create something that's really great. I'm obviously an operator, so I want to have games that I operate and make money and that's viable. But first and foremost, I want to eat good food that we're going to cook. You wouldn't go to a restaurant where the cook doesn't eat the food at the restaurant. You're probably not going to do that. So I want to really under-promise and over-deliver. And I know there's a lot of hype and a lot of expectation for the game, and you know, part of that is to my fault or my credit. But I think I've been successful in getting more awareness for pinball. I don't believe pinball belongs to me. It belongs to all of us. If I didn't build games or nobody else built games, pinball is going to certainly exist. Some other crazy ass, can I say ass? Some other crazy person is going to come along and they're going to start a pinball company. You know, we're all getting older, we're not getting younger. I also don't see a reason why I would tell you my problems in running my business. You might sit there and politely say, okay, well, you know, it's difficult to do that, and that's great, but if I want to hear problems, I could go find problems somewhere else. You're coming to me, you're a customer, I'm supposed to make you happy with what you're doing. And a lot of you here know that because a lot of you here are customers of mine already. And what happens is a lot of my customers, we kind of become more friendly. And I know maybe they're acquaintances, but I consider you friends. And I need to do the right thing, which is also a Brooklyn thing. I'm lucky because the difference in what I do for the last 35 years that I'm doing it, I don't have a job. I just do what I love to do. I'm very fortunate. I'm very blessed. I know that. I have a lot of friends that... doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, whatever, and they make a lot of money, and they're miserable doing what they're doing. And a lot of times I hear them say, you know, you're really lucky. You get to play games, so you get to go fly all over the place and just, you know, check on amusement centers or whatever. And obviously, we know that there's a lot more involved than that to run any kind of business today. And really, I'm not here for a business course, but I'm just here to tell you that what I have is a passion. I have an energy. I have a drive. I have a desire. You can't fake any of that, okay? When I go home, I play pinball. I have pinball machines at home. I own pinball machines. So I'm in it. I love it. My son is in it. My son and daughter. My son now is 20 years old. My daughter's 23. She graduated Monmouth University, so she kind of went to school with Miles Austin. He was, I think, a year ahead of her. And she works for the company. She's in marketing. She graduated with a communications degree. My son is going for a business major. He'll join the company, too. And I like that. I like seeing them involved in the company. I like the family part of that. What I've done also is I've really made myself very accessible. There's an 800 number. A lot of people know it. It's on shirts. It's on hats. It's been around for years. It actually rings on my cell phone. So people call this 800-473-JACK number, and they think like on a Saturday or something, they're going to get, you know, some answering machine or whatever. They get me. And they're like, I got you. Right, because you called me and I answered the phone. That's how you got me. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it's not really rocket science, you know. And you answer your own phone, right, because you want to call me. If I have you talk to voicemail or a secretary, I'm not going to get the phone. So the simple things that worked many years ago still work. The way you treat people as you want to be treated, the golden rule. You know, yes, it's a business. We do need to make money. What happens is I get more familiar with people, and it's like, oh, crap, this guy bought like five games from me. How am I going to make money on him now? You know, I just, well, we still have to do that, you know. Personally, you know, I said to somebody before, I gave up meat, and I gave up cursing for Lent. I really don't curse much. Maybe it's been over-exaggerated, but I just want to say everything that I've been able to do, I give it up to God's grace. It's really not me. There's a greater power. There's things even greater and more important than pinball machines, believe it or not. And when all is said and done, we have a lot of common things that bind us together, and it's really more than pinball that bind us together. I'm very happily married to my wife, Joanne, my high school sweetheart. She's gets more play in the magazines than me. She's a lot prettier than me, that's why, for 27 years. And one of the sayings that I tell my customers a lot of times when they're really trying to decide about buying a game, I tell them, well, a happy life is a happy wife. So if you make your wife happy, chances are you're going to be able to get anything you want in the house. I have, you know, and it's not material things all the time. It's I love you, thank you, bring flowers once in a while when it's not a funeral. You gotta do things for people when they're alive. You know, I really hate to send flowers to somebody when they're dead. There's people in the room that know some of the things that I like to do, and some of them I like to do anonymously, a lot of charity things and stuff like that, and it's kind of really cool. All right. So that all aside, let me give you a couple of minutes about what Jersey Jack Pinball is. And I never had – oh, the website's up there. Today the website went up, which is kind of nice because people are saying to me, oh, you know, you're this online ambassador, internet guru, pain in the neck guy, and you don't even have a website. So now we have a website. And the website will be continuing a process to build it out. A lot of content that will come from you, other things that we'll be adding, it'll expand. We created a, we have Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Bluetooth and Blueberry and Blackberry and all of those things. We have all those things. We also created a like a mini RGP for all the people that ordered Wizard of Oz. So there's almost 400 people right now that order Wizard of Oz and pre-order. Nobody's seen a picture of the game. Not even me. No, I'm only kidding. Nobody's seen a picture of the game. Okay, this is based on faith, trust, hope, dissatisfaction with product available today, all of the above, possibly. I'm going to promise that I'm not going to let anybody down. This is a product that we're absolutely building. It's real. It's really going to be very good. And when you play that tape back, you know, at the end of the year, and there's games rolling off the assembly line, you know, I'm not going to have to eat my words, okay? What we've done, and if you go to the site, just go to the art team for me, if you would. So what I did was I try to know my limitations in life and in business, and I realized that while I could think of a lot of things, I can't really make them happen because I'm not a designer, I'm not an artist, although somebody might call me an artist of a different thing without paint. I don't draw diagrams or anything like that. I don't use SolidWorks. I don't program music. I don't program games. My job is to be the provider of the rain, the sunshine, the fertilizer, and sign checks. That's my job, okay? And stay out of everybody's way. Hire the best people you possibly can, which is what I did. No disrespect, Steve. I love you, and you are great. You know that. And, you know, I'm happy with the group that we have. We have two great designers working on this game. We have a great programmer. We have two artists, not one, working on the game. We have somebody that just models toys. We have a sound guy that I said like a couple of months ago when Dennis Nordman told me, you know, Jack, and Dennis is a lot bigger than me, so when he talks to me, I got to listen, you know. I says, yeah, Dennis. He says, you have to hire Chris Graner. And it was like a voice of God when he said that to me. And I said, really? What is he going to do? And he's like, well, he's going to do the music. And I said, we have music from The Wizard of Oz that I licensed. What do I need Chris Graner for? So I'm gonna show you why you need Chris Graner. I'm gonna play something for you if it comes up in a second. We'll wait for that to come up. That's kind of like the music you're going to hear when you start the game. And there's like so much that this guy is doing and so much that everybody's doing. And when I get together with them and I'm in the room with all of them, actually, it sounds kind of strange, but it's true. I kind of have to pinch myself and say, you got to be kidding me. These people work for my company. How cool is that? We're really building pinball machines. And, okay, we didn't build anything yet. I got to admit that. But we will build pinball machines very soon, this year actually. So probably what you're going to see is this. You'll see approved cabinet artwork that Jerry Van de Stelt is doing. Now, I don't know, Gary's in the room. He might be able to correct me on that. But Jerry did Lord of the Rings back in 2004, and I think his artwork package was give or take $10,000, let's say. I don't think I'm telling a big secret. Jerry is doing seven different art treatments for us. So he's doing left and right cabinet art, different head, body, the front around the coin door, and the monitor. Everybody kind of knows by now that we're using a 26-inch LCD, basically at the back box bottom. And the back glass artwork is going to be living on that LCD. you know, it won't be there all the time. There'll be other things on that LCD. There will be clips from the movie that'll be used when things happen on the playfield. We want to be careful not to make the game too much stop and go and too much flow. So there'll be things in the programming that if you're a flow player, you'll be able to play it without it being more stop and go. And, you know, we have two designers for the working for the company that are kind of known for stop and go games. And Simpsons Pinball Party, Joe did, and, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dennis did. And those were among the two best-selling Stern pinball machines. In the days when I would sell 12 or 1,400 Stern pinball machines a year, you know, we sold a lot of Simpsons, and we sold a lot of Pirates. I sold more than 100 Pirates in one day on July 14th, 2006, when I visited Stern. And as soon as I put the pictures up, I couldn't run people's credit cards fast enough. It was a great game that Dennis did. So those people are with our company now. Whatever companies that are in the world building pinball machines, they're great. They're going to have great products. As long as the customer base wants to buy them, I'll be successful or they'll be successful. Maybe there's room for 3 or 4 or 5 pinball companies, right, Rick? You would love it if there was 5 or 6 pinball companies. So, you know, I have to take one day at a time. Again, I don't want to overpromise too much stuff and not deliver it. Certainly in what we're doing, there's been a lot of input from our customer base. You know, there's a school of thought that says if you listen to your customers, you'll be out of business. And what I want to give our customers is what I want. I want a full-featured mechanical game with a lot of toys that is fun to play. And it's going to compel young people and older people to come and play the game. Remember the feeling you had when you saw Funhouse for the first time and you saw Rudy's head on the playfield and the thing was taunting you and then everything went dark and the clock stopped. You said, like, holy cow, that's the feeling I want when people play this game. That's what we're going after. We're not trying to just make a game and push it out the door. I don't have any time limit. I set a time limit to start building the game because I know how, look, I'm an electronics technician. I know I work with programmers and other part of my business and artists and other kind of people. If I set the goal was 2 years from now, believe me, it would take 2 years to build the game. So guess what? So many things are happening that are really good things that some of them are being surprised. Because the whole world of pinball has offered me in this new company a lot of resources. And it's really cool. I mean, I had Larry DeMar, who many of you might know or not know, but I had Larry DeMar and Eddie Pellegrini, and they come up to me at IAPA, and they're offering me, you know, buildings and places to work, and Frank Happ coming over to me with a building to work, and just a lot of different resources from a lot of places that are cheering us on, which is very encouraging. You know, there's a few people that want to rain on your parade, and that's fine. You know, everybody's entitled to their opinion because, look, the truth is at this point, we didn't build anything. But the good thing is I can't stop time, and it's going to come. So how it'll happen is I rented a 35,000-square-foot building in New Jersey, which is where the games will be built. The games will be designed in New Jersey. So we're going to prove that something could be designed in one place and built in another place. Today it's really not difficult. Go to meeting, and people like to come to New Jersey, down the Jersey Shore. You rent them a house, and they stay in there for a couple months and set up assembly lines and get everything going. So before this summer happens, we'll be building prototype cabinets. We'll have artwork on those cabinets. We'll be shooting whitewood games. You know, probably have test games. I hope to have something at Expo. You know, that's my plan. It's not going to be a game that, you know, is going to be the game. It'll be something. You'll see something. You know, honestly, the only way I could say this, I have to say it truthfully because I like to be very transparent, open, and honest. If I didn't have any competition, I would show you exactly everything that we're doing right now. We have competition. And the world as it is means that I need to protect our intellectual property and what we're doing and how we're doing it, as does our competitor. Now, while my competitor is a friend of mine on a personal level, we're still competitors. So, you know, I want to believe that both companies, my intent is not to put Stern Pinball out of business. Okay, I believe everybody as a business owner makes their own choices of how they're going to run their business, and they need to base that on what market they're going after. And I was here to hear Gary, and he talked about the three legs, and, you know, pretty much there is some, I understand that, but I don't want to sell to three different segments of a market. I want to sell to every single person on the face of the earth as my customer or my potential customer. So I don't want to lock out anybody. Operators are having a very difficult time today. Our company manufactures, and our company now, I'll say, Elout, manufactures cranes, those things that grab prizes and give them out. The only thing making money in amusement centers today are called Instant Win, which are games like Stacker or Cranes, things like that, or some redemption games if the redemption counter has great prizes. You can't have crock pots and lava lamps. You have to have upscale prizes that people want to play for. Video games make $0. I bought 24 new driving games that I spent, I don't know, $160,000 for, and they're making exactly what I thought they'd make, 70 or 80 bucks a week. I have a Spider-Man pinball machine that's at Universal Studios Arcade in Florida, and it's in the Spider-Man Arcade, and it makes $60 a week. If I put a game in there that was out of order, it could make $60 a week. Now, it's no disrespect against the game. The game's a spectacular game. The problem is the playing public does not want to play that product. I hate to admit that, but that's the case. It's my opinion. It's not, doesn't mean it's everybody's opinion. You could disagree. I'm just an operator with thousands of games. I have no return on investment operating pinball machines. When I can't operate pinball machines and be profitable, nobody on the face of this earth is going to be able to operate pinball machines and be profitable. I was buying them at cost, I'm keeping them in perfect shape, and I could sell them at a very low markup. I wrote articles about it. Gary and I did all kinds of work for years to promote pinball. Okay? The economic fact is, what's in the cash box? That's Lola. And whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. And operators are not going to spend $2,000 on a game if the return on investment's not there. They buy pinball machines today as a necessary evil. If they have a location that's making money and somebody in the bar says, you know, Charlie, I want this game. The guy says, well, you know. But you know what? He could go buy No Good Golfers. He could go buy something like that that's just kicking around that he could find on the internet somewhere and just operate it so he makes $30 a week instead of $50 a week. And that's what they're doing. So we have to, as a community, I don't tell you to go out and play pinball in bars and stuff like that if you don't want to go to a bar. You know, it would be nice to support operators, but, you know, somebody before talked about an operator. His game has fallen off its legs, and the guy is not going to do anything about it. And if you go to the location and you want to operate in there, I come from Brooklyn, okay? Somebody's going to break your face if you go over there and tell them that you're going to put a game in there, all right? I don't care if you are in Texas. I don't think you mess with Texas either. So you got to really look at this whole thing and what it is. You know, what do I need to build to be profitable? Who knows? I don't know. Well, I do know. You know, if we build 1,000 games the first year and 2,000 games the second year and 3,000 games the third year and 4,000 games the fourth year, I think that's realistic. I think that's absolutely realistic. I believe the market in the world is there. Right now, there are a lot of barriers that were put up on the earth to prevent pinball machines from going where they want to go. There's something called ROHS, which it's a compliance that the European Union has that prevents lead from coming into the European Union. So, you know, Gary's in the room, and I could say this because I said this then before. How come it's okay to send games to Europe that have no lead, but it's okay to dump the lead in the United States of America? So all of my games will be ROHS compliant. They're going to go everywhere. I don't want any lead in this country either. okay? I don't care if it costs more money. You know what? Tough luck. You pay for it, or don't buy the game. That's what it's going to be, because I'm not going to have lead in the United States. Everything's going to be lead-free, Rojas compliant. There's problems in Germany. There's problems in Austria. We know there's problems in the Middle East. We're not going to talk about that. But there's problems distributing games. There's people in France can't get games. Or people in Germany, the games are a fortune. Or this guy is a distributor and he doesn't sell to those guys. And, you know, so a lot of things have been created to prevent games from going where they needed to go. And that's based on relationship. It's based on old-time politics. It's based on protecting the marketplace. I can't protect the marketplace. It's not my job. My job is to make the best games that we can make. That's my job. Wherever it goes, it goes. So I think at this point, what I'll do is I'll take some questions. And what I'd really like, you know, I only was in one of these before, and I couldn't hear anybody. So I almost would like to give somebody the microphone, but it doesn't come off. If anybody has a question, just like come up over here. Come up here, ask the question so everybody could hear it, and then you can go back and sit down. I'm going to make you get some exercise to work off the pizza. All right, so whoever wants to ask a question, come on up. All right, then let's put up a hand then if you want to ask a question. Yes, you, the guy with the Virgin Atlantic, come on up. Come on down. What's your name?
John.
John, hi John. How are you?
Good. First question for you. There's rumors going around that there's going to be something underneath the play field. Can you say anything about that?
Like what?
Like a monitor or a window with another something else underneath it.
Okay, I could say something about that. Thank you. What's going to be under the play field? It'll probably be like flipper coils and things like that and stuff like that. Oh, I know what's going to be under there. It's a good question. There's no left. You know, because people said they want to put a little monitor in the bottom so you can look at the score while you're playing so you don't have to look up and that kind of stuff. And, you know, those things are being discussed. But in this game, we have this big LCD in the head of the game. Now, it doesn't mean that game number two would have an LCD. Game number two is not a licensed game. So maybe there's not deep video content to pull from, like from an unbelievable movie that was rated number two, I think the other day somebody told me. It's probably the most seen movie on the face of the earth. So maybe we'll have four score displays or something like that, or a little LCD or something. So we're not really married to what we're doing right now either. We could change it around with what we're doing. So it's possible. You know, it's possible. You won't see it on this game, though. You know. Sir. Hey, guys.
It'll make me walk the whole way up here, huh?
I know, but we could probably hear you, though, too. Maybe that's not a good idea. I don't know. Yeah. Then I'll repeat the question.
With millions of possible ideas, why... Yeah, thank you. Are you proposing? No. With millions of possible ideas, why Wizard of Oz? How did you come about picking that?
Oh, Chris Munson. I know you.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jack.
Nice to meet you. Don't say that on the plane. That's not a good thing to say on the plane. Hi, Jack. That always gets a laugh. You know, I would be tired of that by now. Why Wizard of Oz? Why not? You know, Wizard of Oz, my daughter growing up, I think like a lot of kids, the Wizard of Oz meant or means something different to almost everybody. Everybody's seen it, whether it was all the different nuances about it, all the things that are in popular culture, you know, there's no place like home and don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain, all those things. And then you talk about the music that's in it, some of it's haunting, and you see the flying monkeys that scared the heck out of you and the witch and all the things that it were. And I had a thought of doing some licensed as the first game, and somebody knew the people that owned like the Three Stooges, and I said, what am I going to do with that? And, you know, I've had license discussions with Gary for years, you know, because things would get kicked around, and you talk about it, and you throw it out, and you look at each other, you know, we're going to do a Bono pinball machine, but how are you going to do that? We're starving people all over the world, so we couldn't do Bono, right? So, you know, but I didn't think I could go wrong with a 72-year-old movie. The property is a very difficult property in the license process. It has two full-time historians that work on that property, which, you know, and everything is a million different approval processes. It's a Warner property, which, you know, is Lord of the Rings and some other things, but this one's even, like, it seems to me it's at another level. So, you know, there's Wizard of Oz in public domain that's more than 100 years old. Next year there's two movies at least. There's one called Dorothy of Oz that's going to be produced, and there's another one that James Franco is starring in about the wizard. They're both prequel kind of movies. Wicked on Broadway is wildly successful. They have Wizard of Oz or Wicked going on in London, right, Martin, right? So it's really timeless, and really that's why. When I thought of a pinball machine, I wanted something with deep, rich, well-known content for the first game of a company, because if this game doesn't work, those T-shirts are going to become collector's items, okay? It's not going to be a company, okay? So the game has to really kick it, okay? And that's why I chose that. Somebody next. I'll just repeat the question. I'll take that idea. Yes, sir.
Your price point, Jack, as a person who works in the semiconductor industry, your price point to me seems high for what people will pay for. I've had a retail sale to play some pinball, and price was a huge driver. Forget about the game, forget about the name, forget about anything on the playing field.
Well, that price is not far off Avatar Limited Edition, and this is going to be a lot more game. Okay, that's my first thought. And I've sold, again, thousands of games. So, again, I need to be the customer when I think of these things. You're at a disadvantage right now because you don't see the game. My hope is that when you see the game, you get value for your money. And I think in the podcast I used one of my favorite subjects. I'm a Mont Blanc pen collector. So I don't really have any vices. I don't go out drinking. I don't have girlfriends. I don't waste a lot of money. But I have this thing about Mont Blanc pens, and actually I got one with me today. It's this one is Mark Twain. So this is a limited edition. So this pen's like about $1,200. I'm not saying that to brag, but okay, I'm wearing sneakers that are $5. So it kind of evens out. So to you, is this pen worth $1,200? No. To me it is. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about perceived value. And, you know, when you have the business that I have where we're selling really everything nobody needs, I'm not trying to take advantage of the marketplace. You got to think of this too. We're setting up a whole company right now. So the first game, there's going to be a lot of things like kind of front-loaded into it. We have tooling and we have all that other stuff. But I don't want to break my cardinal sin. I don't want to tell you about my problems of running the business. So we're going to have, the jury is going to have to be out for a little while until there's a product for you to judge. But I am sensitive to that. I believe operators, you know, we sell cranes that are 10, 12, we sell the Wizard of Oz pusher. It's $50,000. For an operator, it does not matter what it costs, it matters what it makes. Okay? So when you're talking about the operating community, I don't ask a distributor what the thing costs. I want to see collection reports. Personally, I don't remember the last time I saw Stern Pinball collection reports. I haven't seen them in years. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, I could be corrected, but it's not something that's important right now. Yes, sir.
Who do you see as your primary target customer?
You got a credit card?
I have a credit card.
Okay.
Offhand, I don't know what the retail value of your first limited edition machine will be. And are you obviously... The business owner has to get the revenue out of this machine, otherwise they don't get it.
Right.
But the machine has to be something recognized among the players as extraordinary to drive us.
Right. Well, that's the whole purpose of starting the company, is not to create the same, it's to create something different.
I have a follow-up.
Okay.
What is your out-of-pocket in this so far?
Personally, myself, I put $250,000 into the company to get it going right now. Okay, there's a commitment, a seven-figure commitment to what needs to be done.
Okay.
Money is not a problem right now.
Okay.
Actually, if I wanted to share a problem, it's probably like I want to play the game tomorrow. That's my biggest problem. Okay, I want to play the game. And I don't want to tell all my people, you know, you're standing in my way, give me the game already. Because if I had the game, I could sell another couple thousand of them easily. Sir?
Not too long ago, it's still out, they did a Wizard of Oz slot machine.
Yeah.
With surround sound and sound
yep.
in the movie. Sounds terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to be able to do that type of thing? The
interesting thing about the Wizard of Oz, I believe Roger Sharp, a friend of ours that works at Williams, Roger Sharp, everybody knows Roger Sharp, he's unbelievable guy, great person, pinball guy. He was the one that licensed the Wizard of Oz. And that is the highest grossing slot machine. And they are phenomenal. I mean, if you see it, I stand there with my mouth open, and it's an amazing game. And this is the wow effect that we want to get with our game as well. So you're absolutely on the right track. Yes, sir.
Is the goal to get a machine back on wraps, or is the goal to get these collectors?
Well, the goal is to... Gary, thank you, Gary. I love you. You know, Gary and I have an interesting relationship, and it's not really love-hate. It's not hate-hate, and it's not love-love. I think there's a mutual respect there because, you know, it's off-topic but on topic. I mean, I'm not going to break my arm patting myself on the back, but I'm going to tell you what Pat Lawler told me several years ago. Stern Pinball still existed because of me, promoting that company, helping that company, coming up with ideas, and really putting my blood and sweat and tears into the company, okay? Shrek was my idea with Gary, based on Pat's game. You know, Gold Elvis was my idea. You know, I don't need to go take credit for all these things, but Gary's upset that I started a company, and he should be. You know, he wishes me well, but I think he also wishes I might fall in a wishing well, too, so. I don't know. You know, I would say it if he's here. I mean, you know, he's a friend. It's really weird. You know, I told him face-to-face, eye-to-eye, what I was doing in November. I didn't announce it to ruin holiday sales or anything like that. We'll see what happens. You never say never. I'm not an operative for Stern. I'm not going to go take my game and build it on his assembly line. We're not doing this, you know, in a secret way. I love to read some of these posts on the news group. You guys and ladies, you can make... You know, some of these soap opera shows go off the air if we could. You guys, you know, whatever jobs you have in your regular world that pay all those bills, you're all wasting your time, okay? Because you should be writers and you should be creators, producers. You have an unbelievable mind, an unbelievable imagination, and an unbelievable will to think and to make. And that's why we're pinball people. So it comes all the way back around circle. Next question. Oh, I'm sorry. So I never answered your question like a true politician. You know, the idea is to put them on the route. I have several operators that ordered games now. You know, the $6,500 price, the pre-order price. We have this many games sold without anything being seen. So I'm kind of like on track to probably sell out of this game like by July 4th, I think. And it depends, you know, I want to release pictures. I can't release any pictures till Warner Brothers says it's okay. So that's kind of the problem, too. So I want to operate the game, okay? I want operators to operate the game. I want you to buy it for your home. But I don't want it to be in museums. Pinball doesn't belong in a museum. It's great to go to museums. I know that, you know, Vegas and Pacific and all these things. It's not a museum piece. It's a game. It's supposed to be out there. Get people in the world to play these things. You know, we're not popular right now because people do stuff that they see on TV. You know, The Who this morning, me hearing Pinball Wizard, that was like, holy cow, wow. You know, but a friend of mine's Parker Bowen III. He's a pro bowler. He's, you know, in the Hall of Fame. Who the hell goes bowling anymore? Nobody goes bowling. You barely see it on TV. You know, it's like, it's fun to go, but it's not in the popular culture right now. So we're going to make, collectively, all of us, we need the vehicle to drive in, though, to drive other people to believe in what we believe in. So we got to get them to play something that's really cool. And you can't get them to play something really cool if you build the game with a calculator, okay? I'm not building my games with a calculator. We're building our games with passion, okay? And we want them to be fun. We want you to like go and say, "Holy cow, look at this thing. I got to put money in this thing." And guess what? Every operator that buys a game from me is getting a Mars bill acceptor on it for free out of my pocket. Because nobody's got change on them. I don't have change. Who's got change? I don't have any change. They got bills. The game's got to take bills. It's got to have a bill acceptor on it. So the bill acceptor costs $250. Oh, well, it's $250. Because if I make sure those games go out and they make money, boo-hoo, you know what's going to happen? Hey, Charlie, you know what? The game made $600 last week. The game made $500 last week. We're going to sell more games. Yes, sir.
Kind of talking about like technology incorporated into each of these games. I think the screen is a great idea. I mean, I've long awaited an LCD screen to show up. You think you'll incorporate anything with like internet?
Absolutely.
Because my thought is, I mean, I have a friend who's in Seattle. He's a big Pin fan. And so we kind of play back and forth. Hey, this is what was going on.
We have a game that's going to come out. Good friend of mine and a pinball guy, his name is Tim Storm. He owns a company called FatWallet.com. Okay? Anybody know what FatWallet.com is? You know that company? You know Tim? Anybody know Tim? Okay. Tim's a friend, about 8-9 years. Unbelievable entrepreneur. Good friends. Guess what? How about this idea? How about you play a socially connected, internet connected, obviously, pinball machine that you walk up to and you log into it and it logs you into your Facebook account or it logs you into your Fat Wallet account and you play based on the score. And you know what you get your score? The score gives you credit on your FatWallet.com account to get coupons and buy merchandise. That's going to happen. I'm working on that. All right? So there you go. I don't care who knows it because we got patents on these things pending and stuff like that. Okay. In the United States right now, we have one distributor that stepped forward and ordered 50 games, Nick Parks. And he actually has, he doesn't have a picture. He has like a little thumbnail of The Wizard of Oz on there. And I haven't looked for any U.S. distributors at the moment. A lot of people call me. I can't set up every single person as a distributor because nobody makes money then, okay? I need people that have viable companies that will support the product. When I was a distributor for Stern, because Stern, I don't know why, they delisted me as a distributor. Could you imagine that? So when I was a distributor, we sold thousands of games. Stern never helped us. We didn't need their help. We had better people. Not Joe Blackwell wasn't a bad guy. I love Joe Blackwell. I didn't feel that I should lean on Stern. They were kicking in $75 a game at the time to help with warranty repairs. Well, you know, Stern's warranty is 60 days on the score display and 90 days on the circuit boards, okay? So I extended that warranty by 3 years. What did I have to lose? The game's going on your house. So look, 3 years are going to pass. I don't think you got 3 weeks worth of play on the game, you know? So what shot do I have at replacing stuff? Once in a while, we replace a score display or boards. A board is very rare, even with the surface mounts and everything. They have a good system. It's made by a friend of mine, Bob Kowalski. He actually owns that system. Stern doesn't even own their own operating system. Unlike our company, we own our operating system. We're creating our own intellectual property. Gee, I'm giving away all kinds of information today. Isn't that the purpose of a seminar? Wow. Amazing. So, you know, there's a lot of different things going on, and as much as I want to say even more, you know, before I give away more stuff. Who's next? Didn't you ask a question already?
I didn't.
All right.
On pre-sales, I'm a homeowner buying one. Do you know, like, how many homeowners or pinball
players? Oh, right now, you know, I would say it's about 90% home customers and about 10% operator, probably right now. Let's go to the videotape. Where's my able-bodied assistant here? Okay. At this time, I would like to call to the podium Rick Bartlett from Planetary Pinball. And we have an announcement to make. So what we've done, and a lot of people asked, Jack, hi Jack, where are you getting your parts from to build your games? You know, what are you going to use to build your games? So we can answer that today. You want to read this?
Well, I can read it. Sure.
You want to read it from here? Okay, great.
Yeah, basically, I'll paraphrase it since I don't want to read this. Basically, what we've done is an agreement. Let me see if you guys can hear. Basically, an agreement between PPS and Jersey Jack to utilize pinball replacement parts within its new platform of games. So
Williams Bally.
That includes the Williams Bally games, parts games. Parts will be in Jersey Jack pinball games, and you know, that'll allow Jersey Jack to build, you know, really the best games using the best proven parts in the industry. You know, as you know, flippers will work and things like that. They'll have access to all our patents. We acquired about 40 pinball patents, Williams patents, so they can use any of those that they wish. And you know, and then also there's a distribution back end on that where we'll distribute parts for Jersey Jack pinball as well. So I think it's a great arrangement, and I think, you know, our business is really to be in the pinball parts business. We license Williams parts to help make, you know, the replacement parts, but also we have the rights to make games, and with that, you know, we're really trying to help enable, in this case, Jersey Jack make the best game they can. So that's the announcement. We're pretty excited about it, and you know, we're just trying to get pinball to keep going. So that's really what we're happy, and congratulations, Jack, and there we go.
Well, Rick knows, really, I couldn't have done it without him. And again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that you know, you could all have dreams, you know, and you can create anything you want. Anybody can. It's real easy. Okay, it really is. But you need to have the right people doing it with you. If you don't have the right people, it's not going to work. And with this agreement now, we get to use all, you know, as Rick said, the 40 patents. You're going to have, you know, Bally Williams flippers in the game, mechanisms, bumpers, all of that stuff. I am not in the parts business. Okay, I get the willies when I go to his place, and I look at, I know he does too, but there's so much stuff involved. So the great thing about the agreement is that he doesn't want to build games, and I don't want to build parts. And, of course, the game is made up of a million parts. We know that. So we're going to be building parts that will help him, because some of the parts we're going to be making now for the first time, he hasn't gotten to make them yet because there hasn't been a need for them. Unique items that are going to be made for our games, like Matt is making several toys for the game. We're not going to like the Wizard of Oz store and buying stuff off the shelf, okay? So it's going to be unique items that are made for the game. All those parts will be available through Rick. And they won't be like the stock market every day when you call, you know, how the mood strikes you, whatever the bank balance is, that the part went through the roof or something like that. One of my thoughts with these games as well, I got to see what the bill of materials is at the end of the day and how I feel and how everything looks. If I can put, you know, an extra plastic set in the game, if I can put an extra decal set in the game, you know, these cabinets, they're not going to be silkscreen to the cabinet. They're going to be using what? The UV stabilized inks on a very high quality vinyl. So, you know, if your game gets damaged some way in the course of its life, you're going to be able to buy graphics for the cabinet. So, a lot of the things that we're doing, we're not doing them as business people might do them. It's almost as if, you know, it's collectors, players, and operators building the games, because, duh, that's what I am, okay? So that's how the game's getting built. And it's really cool. Anybody have any questions now based on this? Yes.
How many games are you making?
As many as I can. Okay, so the first game, you know, I announced the Emerald City Limited Edition game. And for many years, my argument with Gary, one of my many arguments with Gary was, don't build regular games. People buy regular games, and then you come out with a special edition game, and then they got to take the regular game, and they have all kinds of trouble selling it and everything. Don't do that to people. So, look, it's my company. I can do whatever I want. I don't have to have a board of directors meeting. I go take a shower, and I come out, and I have my board of directors meeting. I decided, well, guess what? I'm building Emerald City Limited Edition, 1,000 games. Because why? Because it's a brand new company, even though there's a bunch of old-timers in the company. It's a new company, so I'm going to make it very collectible, this game. It's going to be a special game. So basically, I fully expect that first 1,000 games to sell out, and then we're going to go into building regular games. There'll be a regular game. Price will be lower. Because I don't have to recover a lot of the costs and tooling and thing like that in the next bunch. I front-loaded everything into the first 1,000 games. So, if we spend $5,000 making a tool, it sounds like it might be a lot of money, but it's $5 a game. But there's a lot of 5s and 10s and 20s and 40s and 100s per game that make up this game.
Hey, Jack, your physical plant's going to be in New Jersey. Are all your suppliers going to be there as well?
No. They're scattered. You know, the good thing about doing what I'm doing right now is if I tried to do this on, you know, Williams closed, October 25th, 1999. So if I tried to do this the day later, there really, you know, there were vendors, but what happened in the 11 years since, I guess it's 12 years now, right? Wow. 12 years since is that a lot of those guys closed up that did all that stuff. Most of them, a lot of them closed up. And then the good thing about the United States and especially pinball collectors is, you know, things pop up. So all of a sudden there's people making ramps and there's people making this and there's people making that. And, you know, Rick's got to go run around policing all of that stuff. The Planetary Pinball Police, the P3, they're out there looking at all kinds of things. They're not as bad as it was when Wayne was around. That guy, what a character. But anyway, those parts will get made, and that's how it'll work. Thank you. Who else? Yes, all the way in the back there.
Yeah, a comment and a question. One thing that my wife and my cousin noticed is some of the things that people in this room think are so cool, people who are like wives or 18-year-olds,
20-year-olds, 12-year-olds, it doesn't mean anything to them. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to ask the question, what kind of planes do you have for testing the games before you start them? Well, that's a good question, because part of it is how the game's going to look. You know, I really didn't. Jerry Vanderstelt, if you know his artwork at all, I don't really expect, like, the rosy-cheeked Dorothy skipping down the yellow brick road. The game's probably going to have a little bit more of a darker look to it, where it focuses probably more on the witch and the wizard and things like that and the flying monkeys. So you have another artist, Greg Frares, which is an unbelievable artist, doing the playfield artwork, the plastic sets, and decals. So different things on this game. Again, it's very difficult to try to please everybody. And as I said earlier, trying to please your customers is not always a route to success. A lot of it is going to come from me and a design team as to what the game is going to be, obviously, because we're the ones designing the game. I have a pretty good pulse of what the market is and what the market wants. And we're going to find out if I'm right or I'm wrong. Well, that's what it's going to be. Yes. Yes. There's no pixelated dots and cut and paste, stock art and everything. Jerry Vanderstelt. Jerry Vanderstel, what I was saying before when Gary was here, and I didn't finish the thought, Jerry is doing 7 different pieces of artwork. And here's what he did. You know, you all got a little piece of paper, okay? Jerry is kind of into the Wizard of Oz. He thought it's a great thing. He loved it and everything. And then what he said was he really understood it. And now what he's doing, the back glass artwork that he's going to create for the game, he's doing the original, is on 30 inches by 40 inches. And I bought the original from him. And if I tell you what I paid, it's a lot more than the pen, okay? But I want that original artwork. So he's going to take that original artwork and he's licensing from Warner Brothers that artwork to do as a limited edition print and lithograph series. So he's going to make like 1,500 limited edition lithographs, and then he's going to do prints. So that card would enable you to win one of the, there's going to be 3 prints that he signs, okay? So that's kind of like my gift to you for like filling out some information, which I may have some of your information anyway. So it's really cool when the artist not only does it because he's making money, but he's passionate about it and he believes in it, and he's getting a pinball machine, not in with the deal, because I negotiated the deal and he beat me up and he got $42,000 to do the artwork on his game. Okay, so it's more than 4 times the amount of money that Stern spent. This is a very expensive game. I'm not complaining. I'm bragging. Okay, it's a very expensive game to build, and it's going to show it. When you see this cabinet, when the game is off, you're going to fall down and say, oh, my God, I got to go play that game. That's what I want to expect out of this thing. Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't get to you before.
What is your opinion, we heard Gary talk before about skill versus luck in a game. Do you share the same opinion that the games have become too much skill and could be more luck? Or?
At home, here's the game. Here's some of the games I have at home. I have a Cyclone. I have a Rocky and Bullwinkle. I have a Buckaroo. Let's talk about just those 3 games. You know, I don't know how much similarity there is in them, but you know what? When I play Buckaroo and it kicks my behind and I really got to make that one light up, that I got 1,000 points, I feel like I accomplished something. I think the problem that happened with pinball, part of it is the scoring. It's not realistic because I shoot the ball and I don't know what the ball did, and I got like 10 million points and I'm disconnected from the game. I don't get to see everybody else's score. My ball disappears somewhere. And guess what? If we're not pinball players, we lost our audience. Okay? I don't think, personally, luck, it's not luck, it's not skill, it's a game. It's a game. There's too much being said about it. It's got to be a fun game. I mean, that's what it's got to be. It's got to make me want to come back. See, I don't believe that game should show you everything it's doing every game. I don't believe the game needs to have an Italian bottom. Our game is going to have things on it. The game is drawn. I wish I could just pull the thing up and show you the play field right now. It's unbelievable, but I don't have it to play, so what point is that? But it has things on it that weren't done in many years, and it has things on it that have never been done. Because you know why? This team hasn't worked with me. We haven't worked together. So, of course, the competition can't do what we do. You know why? Because they don't have those people working for them. I do. So I don't think it's predictability. I think it's disconnect. I think the player is disconnected from the game. That's why it's not making money commercially.
What are the dimensions of the cabinet going to be like?
It's a Williams cabinet. It's a standard Williams cabinet. Think of Cactus Canyon. That's the cabinet we're using. That's the game. You know, I don't have to design a cabinet. We got... Rick, you want to talk about drawings?
Well, yeah, I mean, we furnish drawings for any of the Williams parts that are needed, you know, which greatly accelerate what they need to do. So, you know, any of the Williams cabinets, whether they be wide body, narrow body, we have all the cut files and all the drawings and all the stuff, and that's what we're doing, you know, is furnishing those to help with the, you know, any of the CNC routing and those types of things. So, you know, so if people are wondering, well, how the heck do you start a company with nothing and accelerate up to a full, you know, umpteen thousand parts, you know, that's kind of how you get going. So,
See, look, I didn't just do this on New Year's Day on the Spooky Pinball Podcast. I think now you all recognize that I've been working on this a little bit longer, right? So follow the yellow brick road. Come along. Come along. Those that want to come along, come along. Even the people that wrote on the news group, I hate the theme. I don't like the game. I'll let you know when they all give me their money to buy the game, because they're all going to do it, hate it or love it, whatever it is. When they see it, we got all of them, okay? I'll take one more question, because then the movie's going to start, and I think you guys had an hour. Well, I'll take three more questions. I'll take seven more questions. No, I'll take 12 more questions. Yes. Pretty lady in the front wearing a Jersey Jack shirt. You see, Steve, I know how to do this, you know. This is pretty good, right? You know, Steve, I almost said Steve Ritchie's doing the second game, because the rumor out there was that Steve Ritchie's doing the second game. You know, never say never, who knows. But Dennis Nordman and Greg Frears are doing the second game. Third game, we already have a designer for the third game. Honestly, guess what? I'm not looking to build four pinball machines a year. I could be building a Wizard of Oz for 2 or 3 years. I hope I build 10,000 of them. I'll just run Wizard of Oz. It's okay. It's all right with me. We'll bake Italian bread all day long. There's customers that want to, or pizza, or whatever analogy you want to do. I'm not, and Dennis understands, you know. Dennis is sharing in the money that game number one makes, even though he's really the designer of game number two. He and Joe have good personalities where they collaborate well together. Dennis doesn't have a bad word to say about anybody in the world. He's like the nicest guy in the world, that guy. So, you know, if he gets game number two, though. That's what I told him. Yes?
So I selected my number and I picked...
Who are you?
Carrie Vinegar.
Oh, hey. Oh, yeah. I just met you. No wonder why you look familiar.
I picked a number that was significant to me.
Yes.
And I discussed it with you.
Yes.
So I have to wait for that many years to be built?
No, the number thing, all you people that are customers of mine know the number thing drives me out of my mind. And, you know, like the first guy that orders a game orders like number 741 or something like that. So everybody's all over the place, and there's people changing numbers and making deals with each other. And, you know, we knew who was getting number 68. There was no doubt about that. Kim Mitchell was getting number 68. You know, that I wrote that before I even started the list. He was the first number. All right, let me take one more. Yes, Kim Mitchell.
Yeah, you targeted fourth board completion.
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering how you're doing.
Well, I actually said, I don't want to go back to what I said. I said we'll start building games in the fourth quarter. We're actually going to start building games probably in June or July. You know, we're going to be assembling cabinets and doing things like that and everything. So I fully expect to have games that I could sell, like, sometime in December. I'm not promising anything under a Christmas tree or Santa Claus is going to shove this down the chimney or anything like that, but... You know, so look, I don't want to sell a product that's not done. All right, you got Keith Johnson programming this thing. You can't even imagine what that's going to mean. I mean, Lyman is a great guy. I love Lyman. Lyman and Steve are an unbelievable pair together. They're going to do amazing things at Stern. I know that. And in my heart, I love both of them, and I wish both of them the best. But you know what? We don't have a bad team either. I mean, it's... We don't have a bad team. And if we need any other resources, we need any other people, we need anything, I just go to the hip and we go get it. All right? So, everybody, thank you very much. I really appreciate your patience and your loyalty.
Thank you, Rich. Very good. Thank you.